This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. And Howard, it is, as this podcast comes out, we are a day away from the official start of trade season. Wednesday is when I believe 85% of NBA players are eligible to be traded. Now, that doesn't mean there's going to be a flurry of activity on Wednesday, but when you talk to league executives, this is when they kind of really start to lock in on making deals. So happy start of trade season, Howard.
Happy start of trade season. I'm just glad that you and I are not in COVID protocols and that we have enough bodies to record this podcast. Unlike the Chicago Bulls, who probably can't even field a like hopscotch team. I don't even know what a hopscotch team would have on it. But
I'm glad, by the way, that the NBA postponed the next two Bulls games.
It was the right call.
I know other teams have dealt with COVID issues, but the Bulls have the most serious issues right now. And at some point, you have to start thinking about the integrity of the regular season, not just the health of players, which is, of course, paramount, but the integrity of the regular season. If you're making the Bulls, who are probably going to be in the thick of a playoff race, go out there and play with like three regulars and five guys they signed off the street. So yeah. I think the NBA did the right thing.
It's rather extreme. As far as, you know, trade season goes, you know, I mean, listen, history has taught us that getting to that December 15th date, which is when most of the guys who signed contracts in the offseason become eligible to be traded. It's not like the floodgates open. It's not like there's a bazillion deals. I don't know that we should expect anything in the next couple of weeks, but, you know, some things have been simmering all along anyway, like Ben Simmons was simmering. So with more players eligible to be traded, there's obviously just more, the market becomes looser. There's just more pieces to move around, especially when you want to do multi-team trades. So there's that part of it. And then, of course, the trade deadline itself, we should note, is February 10th. Remember a couple of years ago, they moved it up so that it's no longer, you know, it's now well in advance of All-Star. So the window is smaller. You get to this point in the season, everyone's had their moment where they've realized, oh, no, guess we're not going to be good this year. Everybody can come to terms with where they truly are as a team. And so I think the clarity of where teams are this deep into the season, plus the December 15th date, plus February 10th as the trade deadline, and really only, you know, this small window, I think, yeah, this is when it will become real. The discussions will become more substantial. How soon we actually get anything for us to all be buzzing about, you know, we'll see.
All right, I want to run through our lists of buyers and sellers that we see out there. But before we dive into that, I want to kind of look at two teams in particular and kind of where we sort of place them. And the first team I want to look at is Brooklyn. Specifically when it comes to Kyrie Irving. Now, The Athletic had a story this week that suggested there was renewed optimism that Irving would be able to play or would be coming back to play for the Nets this season. Irving, of course, has not played a game for Brooklyn because he has declined to get the vaccine. New York City law says he cannot play home games at the Barclays Center unless he has at least one shot. That, by the way, is going to change at the end of the month when Kyrie or anybody is going to have to be fully vaccinated in order to get in and participate in events at the Barclays Center, meaning two shots of the Pfizer or Moderna. The NBA, I mean, we're not going to get into this, but the NBA is progressively moving towards making sure players have three shots to be considered fully vaccinated as well. So there's a lot goes into that. Now, The Athletic report, Howard, was a little vague, and I'm not exactly sure what I make of it. There was the suggestion that the Nets might be open to Kyrie coming back and practicing with the team and only playing in road games. That was something the Nets had no interest in as recently as 2 months ago. I mean, Joe Tsai, Sean Marks, they were pretty definitive that it didn't make any sense for Kyrie Irving to return. and only play in like 50% of the games the Nets had. It didn't make sense to them 2 months ago. I don't know why it would make sense to them now with the Nets holding the best record in the Eastern Conference. Certainly they could use Kyrie, but it still presents the same conundrum of having to basically put together a rotation, a lineup, a system in a way with him in the lineup and one where he's without. So first, let's start there. Like, your reaction to this report that there's optimism in Brooklyn that Kyrie could return.
Listen, I'm not doubting the report. I'm not here to critique the report. But optimism based on what? And that question was not answered within that same report. And so I don't give it, I'm not paying it much mind, to be honest. Nothing has changed as far as we know. If Kyrie Irving's going to suddenly, after all these months of digging in his heels, suddenly decide he's willing to be vaccinated, okay, great. But why do we have any reason to believe that that's going to happen? I don't think so. In fact, everything we know about Kyrie Irving would suggest that there's very little to no chance he's going to change his mind on the vaccine. So there, that's out the window. Every indication so far is that incoming Mayor Eric Adams isn't going to dramatically change New York's laws, which, as you noted, are getting stricter right now in the last few weeks of de Blasio's administration. So that's not going in Kyrie and the Nets' favor. So then the only thing that leaves is the possibility that the Nets reverse themselves, and that doesn't seem likely. Like, why would they all of a sudden decide you can play just the road games, even though we know you can't play home games by law, and have the same disruption and lack of continuity and concerns with chemistry and how the rotation has to change from home to road? Why would you do that? And then you're still now on course for getting to the playoffs if nothing still has changed. Pandemic's not magically ending, folks. And Kyrie's probably not changing his stance, and the city's not changing its stance. So now you get to the playoffs, and Kyrie's going to play just road games in the playoffs? Are you kidding me? Like, how preposterous is that? So, I'm sorry, like, renewed optimism based on what? And unless somebody can answer that question, I don't think we should spend more than the last 5 minutes that we've already spent discussing it. To me, the resolution of the Kyrie Irving situation will happen when the Nets decide it's time to trade him for quarters on the dollar.
Well, that's what I want to bring up next, Howard, because the Nets, if they do decide it's time to trade Kyrie Irving, are in a unique situation. The 76ers, and we'll get to them, they're looking for as close to dollar-for-dollar value in Ben Simmons as they can get, because they're in a different situation, right?
Or $1.50 for dollar value.
Exactly. Like, you know, Ben Simmons has 4 years left on his contract. You know, they're in a position of power here. Whereas Kyrie, yes, it's a little bit different in Brooklyn. The Nets, one thing they can do, and I would argue they should do, is not look for equal value in Kyrie Irving, but look for parts that make sense around Kevin Durant and James Harden. Like, as currently constituted, the Nets are what? Among three, four, five top contenders for the NBA championship this year? So the Nets are already right there at the top of the NBA heap. What they can do is find pieces that make sense around their two stars. Like, you can look to a team like Dallas, which would love to get its hands on Kyrie Irving, and which probably won't ever have the same kind of vaccine problems because of Texas that Kyrie is experiencing right now. You could look down there and maybe there's some combination of like Tim Hardaway and Maxi Kleber and, you know, a few other guys, Jalen Brunson in that mix that makes sense. That would make Brooklyn better right away. I mean, Tim Hardaway, I think, would be a good fit with that Nets team. You know, Maxi Kleber, a defensive-minded guy, would be a good fit with that team. You have the option, if you're Brooklyn, to look around and make a deal that, you know, on paper doesn't make you, doesn't make sense, really, frankly. But you can make that deal because whatever you're getting is better than the zero you're getting right now. And the zero you probably will get from Kyrie over the rest of the season. So unless you have, like, Kyrie or Kyrie's camp telling you that at some point before February 10th, he is going to get vaccinated and he's going to get back in the lineup. I think Sean Marks has to look and look aggressively to make a deal for him.
Absolutely. They absolutely should. And I don't care. I'm not going to say I don't care what I'd be getting back. You want to get decent pieces back. But no, you don't have to get dollar for dollar. You don't have to get another all-star. You don't have to get some ransom of first-round picks. You're not going from Kyrie Irving, all-star caliber player in his prime, to, oh, just pieces. No, you're going from $35 million in essentially dead cap, $35 million that is getting you zero production. You're going from that to Maxi Kleber and Tim Hardaway Jr. or something. Whatever the package is, that actually is a pretty good package to get back, to be honest, because those are two guys who could play for you right now, contribute right now, and would fit in very nicely next to James Harden and Kevin Durant. And that's what you need. If you don't have a big three anymore, and the Nets do not right now, and if you have no belief that you're getting that big three anytime soon, and I don't think they should have that belief, then the next best thing you can do is say, we're all in on our big two. And when you have a big two, you need to now make up for that lack of a third star with higher quality role guys. The Nets have a huge gap between their stars and the rest of that group. They could use some punch, and a deal like that would work. By the way, it's not that big of a sacrifice. One, because Kyrie's not playing at all. And two, he's got an option to leave this summer. And before you say, oh, he'd never do that, I mean, look at his track record. Forces his way out of Cleveland, gets to Boston, leaves Boston. You don't know what Kyrie Irving's next move is. He's making $35 million now. He's got a $36 million option for next season. He could turn it down and walk away. And even if he doesn't walk away, even if he wants to return, after all you've been through with Kyrie Irving for the Nets, and this is not a decision they have to make right now, but are you sure you want to re-sign him to another max deal that's going to extend for 4 years starting next summer? I know it sounds crazy to say that. The guy's incredibly talented and has, a lot of success in this league. But, man, Kyrie Irving is right now sabotaging their championship hopes. Are you really going to bring him back next summer? And if you're not, then that's one more reason to say it's time to just trade him for whatever you can get. And there are 27 other teams that will not have this problem, right? The yeah. only teams that have to worry about local laws regarding COVID vaccines are New York, so the Knicks and Nets, and the Warriors in San Francisco.
He can play for now. Right. I mean, Los Angeles, I wouldn't be surprised if it trends in that direction.
Sure.
Other cities.
But half the league at least could accommodate Kyrie Irving right now without any COVID concerns, other than the possibility that he gets it.
I think Kyrie opts out no matter what, because I do think even if it's on a short-term deal, he'd be able to recoup that money. There's going to be a team. The free agency class next summer stinks. Yeah. So Kyrie, somebody out there would clear space to give Kyrie 2-year max, maybe. I'm not sure if you want to commit 4 years to him, but maybe someone will. But somebody will be out there to pay him that. And it's a great point because, if you're Brooklyn, unless things dramatically change in the next month, how can you trust how this would play out with Kyrie Irving? Why not go out and get 75 cents on the dollar, pieces that fit? You've got Kevin Durant signed to that team long-term. James Harden has given every indication he'll sign long-term. In fact, it makes more financial sense for him to wait till this offseason to sign a deal. Why not keep building around Harden and Durant and fill in the blanks around them with pieces that make sense? So,
yeah.
I'd go that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I absolutely believe, maybe you wait another couple weeks, get to the first of the year, check in again with Eric Adams, the new mayor and his administration, find out what their intentions are. If New York's laws aren't going to change, check in one more time with Kyrie. Hey, Kyrie, you're going to get the vaccine? And if that's still no, and if the city says laws aren't changing,
I can't see Eric Adams, in a city like New York changing anything like that. In fact, what he probably should do is, level the playing field and say, look, visiting players who are not vaccinated shouldn't be able to play either. That's a different conversation.
Listen, I don't know if there's a possible carve out for pro athletes, but could you find some other exception in the law to not lift the law, not ease up the laws across the board, but make an accommodation that allows Kyrie Irving to play.
I just don't know. New York City's not going to go for that.
It seems unlikely. I agree with you. I'm just saying conceptually, maybe there's a possibility there. But once you know for sure that that's not going to happen, and if you know for sure that Kyrie's not getting the vaccine still, you got to trade him. You have to. You cannot afford to go into the latter half of the season and the playoffs with $35 million in dead cap, with an older roster and a rotation that is right now maybe not sufficient to get you through the East into the finals.
You know what? If there wasn't so much history there, you know what makes sense to me is to do a deal with Boston, frankly. Like, like if you could deal Kyrie for some combination of like Marcus Smart and Rob Williams, all of a sudden you've got a defensive-minded guard, you've got a shot-blocking center, both guys younger in their 20s.
The Nets do that in a heartbeat.
Of course. Like, but I think if all things were equal in Boston, if Kyrie didn't have the history he had there and some of the relationships he has there, it would make sense for them too. The Celtics are having an incredibly difficult time scoring right now. I mean, and we'll get into that. But Kyrie going back to Boston, Smart and Williams going to New York, it kind of makes sense for both sides. All right, let's talk about Philadelphia for a second, because there was another kind of sort of ambiguous report that the Nets, or that the Sixers rather, are ramping up conversations about a deal for Ben Simmons. No teams were specifically listed. Like, there are teams in that mix. You got New York apparently emerging as a potential team, Cleveland emerging as a potential team, but it doesn't seem like anything's close with Ben Simmons. And I have to imagine, Howard, that the patience of Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers has run incredibly thin at this point. Like, Ben Simmons has been out since the start of the season. There have been stops and starts to his practicing. At this point, I don't know what he's doing in terms of conditioning with the team, how close he is to being able to play, if he's going to be able to play at all. They're in a dicey situation in Philadelphia. As long as they keep looking for that deal that gets them close to dollar-for-dollar value, I just don't see it there. They could make a deal probably tomorrow to swap Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum, but they're going to want a lot along with that. They could probably do a multi-team deal that brings back, I don't know, some combination of Colin Sexton and others from Cleveland with somebody else. Like, there are deals that can be made for Ben Simmons. I think my question is going to be, as we get into January, like, do the Sixers kind of want to throw away this season? If they don't make a deal and Ben Simmons doesn't play, they're not a championship team. We know that by now. Or do they accept that Simmons is not going to play for them and the best thing they can do is to get the best possible deal on the table and move on from him? What do you think is the mindset right now in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, you know, similar to the Nets, you don't want to waste a season and you don't want to have a dead asset on your books. But, you know, different circumstances and... I think the Sixers have done, especially during their periods of time when they weren't dealing with COVID issues, the Sixers have done okay for themselves without Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is still in his early prime, is a player who is incredibly unique, and when he gets to his next destination, might figure out some of the things that have haunted him in Philadelphia. At his next stop, he may become a shooter. He may become a more aggressive scorer. He may, you know, whatever that light bulb that needs to go off could happen in a different environment. And maybe with a roster that's built more around him than around Joel Embiid. So if you're the Sixers, you know, you understand you've got value and you want to extract the most you possibly can in a Ben Simmons trade. I don't have any problem with the way they've played it so far, but December 15th being the date when everybody's available and we're far enough into the season that more teams are willing to deal, this is when it has to happen. I know Daryl Morey has postured about we'll go 3-4 years if we had to, the length of his contract. That's obviously a little bit more bluster than anything else. But you know, they can afford to wait to a point, but you don't want to waste Joel Embiid's a prime year of his career either. I think the East, the path is there, right? Like, the Bucks are really good, but they're down Brook Lopez and they're not unbeatable. The Nets are missing Kyrie Irving. They're not unbeatable. The Heat are really good. There's a bunch of really good teams, but like the Sixers, if they get the right return, whatever that may be for Ben Simmons, they've got a shot too. So, you know, I don't know what that deal is going to look like, Chris. I don't know what exactly they're going to get, because normally when you trade a player like Ben Simmons, you're cashing out on a star who wants out and you're getting a bunch of picks and stuff, but the Sixers aren't in that position because they have Joel Embiid. So like, it's a very unique spot. And so now you have to probably involve a third or fourth team, and maybe it's picks going to somebody else for some other star.
I honestly, Howard, I can't believe we're here right now. It's mid-December, and like, I don't think the Sixers are finding him at the moment. If they are, I think we'd hear about it, because Simmons camp has not been shy about kind of putting that stuff out there. Like, what's Philadelphia waiting for at this point? Like, do you honestly believe, like, if Simmons is traded to Sacramento tomorrow, like, how many days before he's in the Kings lineup? Two? Like, one practice day and, you know, one conditioning day, and all of a sudden he's playing 15, 20 minutes for that team? We both know that.
Yeah.
Like, the Sixers, for some reason, have decided to kind of not use their best tool in their box here, which is finding Ben Simmons. That clearly evoked a reaction from him.
Yeah, but nothing was going to get him to play, right? Like, nothing is getting him to play.
$300,000 a game, I don't know. That might get you on the court pretty fast.
It might. He might just go out there and dog it. I mean, who knows? I mean, he dogged it in practice early on.
He does that, but he does that. That gives you license to suspend him. Like, I still believe.
But now you've just created an even bigger spectacle, right? Like, you've hurt him and yourselves.
You're still paying him. Like, what's the downside here? I don't understand. Like, they're a pretty average team at the moment. Like, they're getting good contributions from Seth Curry, Tyrese Maxey. These are good players, but they're not a championship level team. So, what's the downside from detonating this Ben Simmons thing? I mean, I don't really see it.
I get what you're saying, but I think that once you have gotten to this point, where he's out. He's not playing. He's waiting for the trade. You're waiting for the right offer to make the trade. You're comfortable playing without him. Trying to force the issue and embarrass him or stiff arm him into getting back on the court through fines and stuff, I'm just not sure it gets you anywhere productive. And so I'm fine with the way they're handling it. The real question becomes, how soon do they get an offer that's worth taking? We don't really know that they've turned away any really good offers. We know that they've asked for a ransom because everybody around the league has told us they've asked for a ransom and that they've asked for too much. Okay, fine. But is there a single example of them getting a even reasonable offer that they've turned down? I don't think so, because I don't think we've gotten to that point yet. I think we are now at the point, again, trade season opening, that we'll see whether there are real offers and decent offers out there. I think somebody will make one. You know, whether that's the Kings putting De'Aaron Fox on the table or something else along those lines.
De'Aaron I think Fox's we'll see value something. Is that's kind of cratered too recently. De'Aaron
sure,
Fox
I mean, there'd have to be some other stuff. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, if I'm the Sixers, I mean, you kind of know who would be available. Like, you can have these discussions about who's available on December 15th. It's not like, oh, December 15th, let's take a look at the list of guys that are out there.
But the reason I bring up De'Aaron Fox in particular, and I'm not suggesting that they should do this, but, you know, the Kings were a team that had high hopes this season. They have faltered once again coming out of the gates. If they're not going to be a play-off team or a play-in team, that's when you start to consider the possibility of a De'Aaron Fox trade or somebody else, right? So, like, It is different right now than it was a couple months ago. Teams have had a chance to see that they are not as good as they were supposed to be or thought they were going to be.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All right, let's take a look at a few of the teams out there we expect to be the most active for different reasons. Give me your top, let's go with buyer first. Who is your top buyer out there on the market?
So, this is always tricky, right? Because if you're going to be an active in the trade market, you are both buyer and seller. But when I think buyers, what I think is a team that's pretty good, but that needs, for whatever reason, a boost to get from fringe playoff into playoffs or from lower playoff to higher playoff team. My number one team in the buyer list has got to be the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah.
Like, this is a young team that has broken through, that is ready to compete at a high level right now, but has still got a couple pieces missing, especially at center. Like, they need a real center. And if we're talking about guys that might be available out there, rumored to be available, like, wouldn't they be a great destination for Miles Turner?
Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, Miles Turner makes perfect sense in Charlotte. He can play up tempo. That's what the Hornets want to be with LaMelo Ball. He can space the floor. That's what they need out of guys in their front court. Now, how they get there is a little complicated. I mean, I assume PJ Washington would have to be a part of that deal. I wouldn't have a problem with that. What else would a team like Indiana want? Oh, you're not giving up Bridges. You're not giving up, I mean, Boot Knight's not there yet. You're not giving up Rozier. Hayward, I don't think so. Like, Hayward's been pretty good for them, and I don't know how if that advances you enough. So what can you put together? Maybe it's Mason Plumlee. You know, is a Plumlee, P.J. Washington draft pick deal get it done? It might. I don't really know what the offers out there for Miles Turner look like. I mean, the report that the Pacers were shopping, among others, Miles Turner is like, okay, the sun rises in the east. Like, the Pacers have been shopping Miles Turner for a couple of years now. Like, this is not new with Turner. It's a little bit new with Sabonis, of course, because Sabonis has been kind of one of their franchise guys and, you know, is an all-star. But Miles Turner, they've been trying to offload for a while. So maybe they would take an offer like P.J. Washington and Mason Plumlee and draft compensation for Turner.
I like the idea of a Gordon Hayward Miles Turner swap just to taunt the Celtics, who could have done presumably the Hayward for Turner thing.
I think you need Hayward. Like, Hayward, I mean, I think Hayward, while not like the veteran leader that the Hornets might be looking for out of him, been pretty good for them. Floor spacing. He's also a secondary playmaker on that team.
Yeah. Look, you have to give up something to get something, right? And what the Hornets have a surplus of, but at least have a generous supply of, is guys who can score and handle the ball and do a few things with it in their hands, right? You've got LaMelo, you've got Rozier, you've got Gordon Hayward. Bridges has come along a little bit in that area. They got some young guys. Like, I like Gordon Hayward there because I like having all of these guys be able to do something with the ball in their hands, but if you're going to shore up your back line and your rim protection and have a space, a spacing big, Miles Turner can do all that. If that means giving up Gordon Hayward and giving a little more responsibility to some of those other guys, I would do it. If you could get away with doing less, a Plumlee, PJ Washington pick kind of configuration, sure. But you know, and the Hornets don't have urgency to strike now. It's a young group. They can afford to take this slowly, but man.
Yeah, this is kind of their honeymoon year, where if they make the playoffs, that's an accomplishment.
Yes.
It's next year when they have to start doing something. But Turner could help them there, too. Like, I think getting him now, getting him to play alongside LaMelo, Bridges et al., would be, give them a little bit of a running start going into next season. Then you can kind of go into the offseason, you know, knowing you've got a five, you've got a 2-3, whatever Bridges you call Bridges right now, you got a one. And then try to figure out how you fill in the blanks around them. I'm interested, Howard. We're swapping text messages and emails about this. You have the Knicks as one of your sellers. See, I had them on the buyer list because while I don't think the Knicks should be pushing all their chips on the table for a championship, they've been so inconsistent. And I do feel like a tweak or two here or there can at least get them back on the track they were last season. Why do you think the Knicks should be sellers at the trade deadline?
Because I don't think they're a tweak or two away from suddenly being last year's team again. I don't know that we've seen anything to suggest that that's the case. Let's review. They got a career year from Julius Randle in his seventh season, suddenly turned into the absolute best version of himself. And the question was rightly asked at the time, is this the permanent new Julius Randle or is this the outlier? And you never know the answer to that for sure until the next season comes along. Well, I don't want to judge him too soon. We're about not quite a third of the way into the season. Maybe Julius Randle still finds that version of himself that shot 40% from three, that was a great playmaker, that, you know, hustled as much as he could, at least on defense, and that was at least passable at that side of the court. Like, this version of Julius Randle is much closer to the one that the Lakers gave up on and then the Pelicans gave up on and that the Knicks signed for a pretty bargain basement contract at the time. And if Julius Randle is going to go from All-NBA second team to not even making the All-Star game, which is possible at this point,
yeah,
then you don't really have a foundational player to build around. Like, I'm not saying he was ever going to be your number one anyway. He's best as your number two or three. But you wanted him to be that player that he was last season, in part because now it's more attractive for a star, whether by trade or by free agency, to want to be in New York. Well, if Randall's not that player again, if whatever magic he found last year has eluded him, well, what are you adding a star to? Why is a star coming to New York to play with Randall and an R.J. Barrett who seems like he's kind of plateaued a little bit? And again, R.J. Barrett is young in his career, and it's never linear, you know, to improve every single year steadily. Sometimes
But Howard, he's been... Like, Randall, you almost predict that's going to happen with Randall.
Yeah.
Last year was... I mean, given how many years he'd been in the league before last season, you could have predicted last season would be an anomaly. Now, the contract, it's not terrible, right? Like, they didn't give him a max deal, which would have been a disaster if they had done that. I think that deal is still... You could still trade Julius Randle if you had to. R.J. Barrett, to me, he's been more disappointed because he's the guy... That based, I know you said it's not linear, but based on last year, I expected him to at least continue to play the way he's played. I mean, maybe not be a 40% three-point shooter, but be close to it this year. Right now, he's down to around 35%. I think you should probably expect him to be around a 45% overall shooter. Now he's down in right around 40% from the floor. Like that. In a way, that's been more disappointing to me than the play of Randall, that RJ has not taken that step forward.
Fair. The problem for the Knicks is they have a lot of young guys who haven't quite taken a step forward, right? Mitchell Robinson continues to kind of tease and then get hurt, and then he's all over the map. He's an unrestricted free agent.
Not a great year. Not a great year for Mitchell Robinson to be going into unrestricted free agency.
No.
You needed to go into that, a year ago, year and a half ago, 2 years, whatever it was.
We're on year four of waiting for Kevin Knox to even be good enough to get into the rotation, and he's not.
No, I'm done with Kevin Knox. I think the ship has sailed. I saw someone say, maybe it was the same Athletic story, teams calling about Kevin Knox. Okay. What exactly are you going to get back in return from?
I'm sorry.
Maybe you can trade Kevin Knox. Maybe you can trade him back to Charlotte or trade him to Dallas to get Reggie Bullock back, because Reggie Bullock is not doing anything right now for the Mavericks, and he was really good for the Knicks.
He was really good for the Knicks, yes. Kevin Knox is a throw-in in a deal involving somebody else. No one's giving the Knicks something of value just to get Kevin Knox.
He's become what Dennis Smith was last year.
Right? Yeah.
Just the guy, with a little bit of potential.
So here's why they're sellers, Chris. I look at this Knicks roster and I say, what are they building? Who are they building around? And where are they in 2 to 3 years? Because 2 to 3 years from now, Derrick Rose is 35, 36. So is Derrick Rose a permanent part of this? Because Derrick Rose would look really good as a sixth man on a team that's going to make some playoff noise, right? Like, Derrick Rose has value elsewhere, more so than he has for the Knicks right now, I think. Mitchell Robinson, if somebody needed a backup center, might give you something for him. Kemba Walker is not even playing for the Knicks. He's on a, $8.8 million contract that goes to 9-1 next year, and that's it. It's a two-year deal. Easy for another team to incorporate. If you're not going to use Kemba Walker, I hate to say it because it was this wonderful homecoming, but it's not working out. So this is why I say they're sellers, because I don't think there's any combination of these guys that's getting you the player that's going to put you back over the top and put you right on track this season. I do think that you take some steps moving backwards a little bit, continue to try to develop Randall, get Randall back on track, develop Barrett, Toppin, Quickly, Grimes had a big shooting night the other night. You've got some youth. Can you pick up another couple of extra picks or a young player? I don't know if you're going to find a new home for Fournier the way he's playing right now. That contract's looking worse than the Randall contract at the moment. But most of these guys are movable, and I'm still looking at who you are 2 or 3 years from now, not can you scrap out another, one-and-done playoff appearance. That's not – what is that building toward? So – and look, by the way, before I finish on this – Alec Burks is on a very reasonable contract, is having a pretty solid season. He could be of more value somewhere else too. So if you're still trying to chase the idea of, well, we're going to be a playoff team come hell or high water, because that's we want to do it just to do it, just to show that we're making progress. Well, you had that last year. It didn't have much sustainability behind it. If you make another playoff appearance just to be knocked out in the first round, which is what this team looks like at best right now, what have you built? What are you moving toward? Whereas if you could flip some of these guys for younger pieces or picks, and continue to build around or and develop the young guys you have, now you can say, okay, we've got a lot of different options for how we build over the next few years instead of pretending that we've already arrived.
Yeah, that's fair. The Knicks are not on a short-term plan right now. As much success they had last year, you know, Leon Rose came in understanding this was a 3-4 year, not rebuild necessarily, but a build to get to contender status. So if you can get something that helps you in, you know, 2 years from now, that makes some sense. The Clippers to me are interesting, especially when it comes to being in the mix for Kyrie Irving. You look at the salaries on the Clippers. Like, they've got a bunch of guys that you could make the money work, right? Like, if the Nets ultimately say, we want to just get a bunch of pieces, right? You could get either Eric Bledsoe or Reggie Jackson, whichever one of them that you'd actually want. You could add Marcus Morris into the mix, who's been good in the playoffs before, kind of a versatile guy, plays two positions. Maybe there's a sweetener there that the Clippers can throw in. And the Clippers are probably a destination Kyrie would want to go to, which is something we haven't talked about in all this, because Kyrie is going to hold some power here, where if he says, you know what, I don't want to play there, I'll sit out the rest of the season, I'll opt out of my contract and go play somewhere else. So that's a conversation you have to have with him if you're a team looking to acquire him. But Los Angeles, playing with Paul George, eventually, if not this season, next season, playing with Kawhi Leonard, deep pockets in Steve Ballmer. I don't know. You'd need the Nets to have that mindset, right, where they just say, screw it, just give me pieces that work. Clippers can kind of offer that. They can kind of throw you some, you know, versatile guys that might make some sense in your rotation.
I agree. The Clippers were on my buyer list. They are the fourth best team in the NBA in defense, based on defensive efficiency rating at the moment, but 25th in offense. And you know, look, that's no mystery why that is. You're missing Kawhi Leonard, you know, one of the best players in the league. Paul George and Reggie Jackson, the rest of this group, to their credit, have been competitive. They've been respectable. But we don't know when Kawhi's coming back or if he's even going to get back this season with the ACL recovery. Getting a guy like Kyrie, first of all, like, go get a point guard, period. Like, I think if they could upgrade a point guard, period, just another playmaker out there. You know, Reggie Jackson and you know, Bledsoe, these guys are good players, but they're scorers more than anything. You know, I could see them even, you know, being a good landing spot for Goran Dragic if that deal comes to pass. We don't know why Dragic is away from the Raptors right now. Ricky Rubio, if the Cavaliers decide to move off of him. Like, the Clippers just need...
Dude, everybody wants Ricky Rubio right now. Like, Rick, yeah. Everybody's looking around going like, why didn't we go after Ricky Rubio when he was available? Like,
the Clippers are another team, too. Like, their defense is already pretty good, but they're another team that I was, like, toying with. Like, are they a Miles Turner destination? Like, that's another team that I think he could be an interesting fit with. But, yeah, I mean, I think anything they can do to especially juice up the offense right now while waiting for Kawhi to come back. If he comes back, great. Now, if you got Kyrie, you got a big three. If you don't, if Kawhi doesn't come back, well, Kyrie and Paul George could do some serious damage in the playoffs. And, you know, look, after the Suns and Warriors, I think the West is kind of wide open. And, you know, the Clippers could put themselves back in that mix. Paul George isn't getting any younger. Kawhi, when he gets back, ain't getting any younger. Like, I would be all in if I'm the Clippers.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned the Warriors, just to kind of move on for a minute here. Like, should the Warriors be buyers here? Like, they've got a great record. Steph Curry is the front runner for MVP. Draymond Green is at the top of the list for Defensive Player of the Year right now. Is Klay Thompson coming back is going to give them a boost. How big a boost that is, I don't know. We have to see what Klay Thompson looks like when he gets back on the floor. But this is a team with three really marketable young guys in Moody, Kuminga, and James Wiseman. They also have a big contract in Andrew Wiggins. They are set up to really blow out anybody that wants to make an offer that brings back a rebuilding package. Like, they're not known for making in-season moves, at least not during this Curry, Thompson, Green era. But, like, should they be aggressive in the next couple of months, or they sit back and go, we've got enough. Klay coming back gives us, you know, shades of an all NBA two guard, or do we kind of push our chips to the table and say, Kuminga, Moody, Wiseman, some combination of them, the contract of Andrew Wiggins, like, could they go out and get CJ McCollum for something like that? Like, McCollum's not Damian Lillard, but he's a pretty damn good player, and add him to that mix, like, or somebody along those lines. Like, I look at the Warriors being kind of a team to watch here because they've got way too many appealing assets to just dismiss as a team that's going to keep it all together.
Yeah. I mean, CJ McCollum with the collapsed lung, I mean, as I don't know even where that's going, and, you know, let's just hope.
You're right. We assume that he's, we're operating on the assumption that
he'll be back.
And I don't know. You're right. He'll be back at some point.
Yeah, let's hope CJ's okay. But in terms of where the Warriors go from here, I mean, you're right, Chris. If they decided they wanted to package the Wiggins contract with some combination of their young guys, I mean, they could get in the discussion for just about anybody who's available. But, you know, a couple things here. One is the owner, Joe Lacob, I think, has been on record a couple times in the last few months as saying he likes the idea that they have these young guys to develop along the way so that they have some semblance of a core post Curry, Clay, Draymond. The other thing, you know, well, I'll just say it this way. There's nobody I trust more on this team than my old buddy Tim Kawakami, who covers Bay Area sports and a lot of Warriors in particular for The Athletic. And Kawakami wrote an extensive and very interesting and very well done piece about Weissman in particular the other day about how the Warriors think Weissman has star potential. And they love what they're seeing from him behind the scenes while he's been rehabbing from the knee. And they're really high on him. And Kawakami basically wrote, and there are very few people I would put this level of stock in, but he basically wrote, forget it. They're not moving Weissman. Now, could Wiggins...
a weird fit with that team last year.
Like, it was, but...
He's a weird fit in that Kerr system. He's a weird fit with that team. Granted, like, he was playing last year after not playing for basically 2 years, so it's kind of really hard to gauge at that point. But, like, that guy... You know, I think he could be a star. I'm just not sure he's a star in that system, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Well, the system is Steph Curry. And to an extent, the
system
guards.
Is... It's two guards, and it's Draymond kind of operating as a playmaker as well. So, yeah.
But Weissman would give them something that they do not have and have rarely had during this era, which is that vertical spacer, that guy who can go up and get lobs from, you know, anywhere within, 5 feet of the basket. Like, he's got the reach. He's got the athleticism. He's a smart kid, smart player, and he can handle the ball a little bit even in space. Like, they're very high on him and what he can possibly do and the dimension he can give him that they don't get from Draymond or Kevon Looney or anybody else who's going to sub in at center. So I see it. And judging him on last season is tough because, you know, Weissman played 3 games in college, was injured for half of his rookie year, and we haven't seen him with the full complement with the Warriors anyway because we haven't seen him with Clay out there. They haven't played together, but they've been practicing together a lot, and which is also a good sign. Weissman's picking up on a lot of Clay's habits. I don't think they're going to be that team, Chris. Like, I think it'd be very exciting to see the Warriors make a move with the combinations that we're talking about. I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't blame them. If I'm this good this soon and still have Clay come back, whatever version of him it is, and then Weissman come back, who else is getting two rotation guys like that in the midst of their season?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But it's just like, if they don't win a championship this year, because that's what it's all about, we'll look back and wonder. We will. If they've made a midseason move, would it have made them better? Like, for example, if I'm Bob Myers, I'm at least calling New Orleans to see what's up with Brandon Ingram. Because Brandon Ingram right now he's on a team going nowhere. There's a reasonable argument to be made, and it has been made to me, that Ingram and Zion don't make a lot of sense. Ingram, unfairly to him, has been compared to Durant in the past. Well, Durant played pretty well in Golden State. Seemed to fit alongside Curry and Thompson. Like, can you make a deal involving Brandon Ingram? Like, you put Brandon Ingram on that team, pretty good. Like, that's somebody I'd be eyeballing, at least, to see what it takes. Like, the Pelicans, they're rebuilding. They're going to this, I don't know if Zion's going to play this year. Yeah, they've got the worst record in the Western Conference as we record this, third worst in the NBA. Like, would you be open to dealing a Brandon Ingram in exchange for two of those guys that I mentioned? Maybe it's just Kuminga and Moody plus Andrew Wiggins' contract? Like, would that not be a pretty big boost? I mean, I don't know if anything guarantees a championship. That comes pretty damn close to add Brandon Ingram to that group of players.
So the Pelicans are on my sellers list, firmly on my sellers list. They should be.
It's got to be Ingram, right? Like, that's the guy. Like,
yeah, I mean, there are other pieces that might hold value for teams around the league, but the Pelicans, let me just cover this real quick. Before people say, well, you got to give it a chance once Zion's back and healthy. Well, Zion's hardly ever healthy, but in the time he's been healthy over his first two seasons, they're 40 and 45 with Zion in the lineup. They're not exactly wrecking people with Zion, Ingram, Josh Hart, whoever else.
I also think we're dreaming about Zion coming back. This latest update of scaling him back combined with whatever condition he's in, combined with the fact the Pelicans are probably going to get to the point where we say, you know what, we don't really need to win. We're probably better off losing. I don't think I'm there yet to say Zion's done, but give it mid-January and in the same place, we might be there.
Oh no, I'm not operating on any premise that he's coming back this season or that there's any season to salvage. Even if he does come back, you're not salvaging this season. You're not making a run to the playoffs. I think where the Pelicans are right now is this latest, you know, absence by him and rehab and everything else gives you this opportunity to completely reassess and say, listen, maybe this isn't the best alignment around him anyway. And granted, we haven't seen a lot of it because he hasn't been on the court enough, but there is plenty of evidence to suggest, as you noted, that Zion and Brandon Ingram don't necessarily fit together. Brandon Ingram would have phenomenal value around the league, and Zion's still young enough that whatever steps backwards you're taking by shipping out a recent all-star in Ingram, it's fine. Whether you're getting picks, players, some combination thereof, maybe you're selling off a few other pieces too. Maybe you're shipping out Valanciunas. Maybe you're shipping out Hart. I think build the team that you think best fits around Zion Williamson. And also with the knowledge now that Zion, you know, maybe you don't want him being point Zion when he comes back. Maybe the less burden or workload, the better. I don't know. I'm just, you know, thinking out loud here.
Howard, this is kind of the problem with assessing Zion on the Pelicans. And it's not a Pelicans thing per se. It's that when I talk to coaches like and ask them like kind of what kind of players fit alongside Zion, nobody really knows. Like he's, I don't want to call anybody unique because there's always players that are kind of like it, but he's a rare type of player, you know, kind of this like sturdy 6'9 ball handling. He's different. That, you know, he's a ball dominant guy as well. So I think it's still up for debate, like exactly what pieces make sense around Zion Williamson. I just wonder if you're going nowhere. Ingram, you're not sure if he fits. Like, would some combination of Moody, Kuminga, Wiggins, maybe some other kind of sweetener in there make it work? So the Warriors could hold on to Wiseman, which they want to do, and still get back a 20-point-per-game score, whatever Ingram is this year, to play alongside Curry and Thompson and be like the mini Durant, like the shadow Durant right there.
I'm not sure I actually – this is going to sound crazy. I'm not sure I want to give up Andrew Wiggins right now. In addition
Ingram.
For the right package, but I'm not sure if Ingram is the right package. And Ingram is great with the ball in his hands.
I'm not sold on Wiggins in the playoffs yet. Like they need to not that there's any evidence of, you know, Ingram doing anything in the playoffs, but I'd much rather have Brandon Ingram there.
In a vacuum, I would rather have Brandon Ingram, but this Warriors team, which has always been about fit and chemistry and just being better than some of their parts. Remember, they started off as the strength in numbers group. And yes, they have Steph Curry, who is an all-time great, and Klay Thompson, who I believe is an all-time great, should have been on the 75th anniversary list. But they have often been a collection of guys who you slot them into the right role, the Iguodalas and Sean Livingstons. And I like the idea of, you know, the chemistry that they've established. There's some value to that. It's hard to quantify, and in a vacuum, you would take Ingram over Wiggins probably. And if you're a team that just needed to have a starting point, who are we building around? You could build around Ingram as one of your top two guys. I don't think we've seen the evidence. You can't build around Wiggins as one of your top two guys. But Wiggins on this Warriors team, especially with Klay coming back,
he's shooting the daylights out of the three this year. He's at like 41%.
And he defends.
You're right. What, you know, you mentioned what Joe Lacob said about having kind of young guys there, though. Like, Ingram's only 24. So even if you're giving up Kuminga and Moody, like, you're getting back a player that fits that mold, like that young guy mold. So you're not sacrificing your future necessarily in giving up a player like Wiggins. I also do think, so I think Ingram, if I'm not mistaken, was in the high 30s from three last year. You put Ingram in that position where he's playing off of Steph Curry and off of Klay Thompson and off of Draymond Green as a playmaker, he's probably going to shoot the same thing. Like, he's probably going to find a way to fit in.
His percentages
pretty well
will
on
go
that
up.
System.
Yeah.
They will
go
up. Yes. Yeah. There's a fallout from playing alongside those guys.
Everybody's percentages go up when you're playing, you know, with two of the greatest floor spacers in history. Two of the greatest shooters in history. I mean, I like it. It's an intriguing possibility. I mean, I think the hardest thing to quantify or properly assess and the risks of messing with is chemistry, right? Like, they've got something really good going right now. And there's already a question of just even what the ripple effects of reintroducing Klay Thompson and James Wiseman will be.
I agree, and I
think Ingram too likes having the ball in his hands and a lot of control. So now he has to make that adjustment midseason to being the guy who's now playing off of Steph.
Does he? I mean, he will, but Steph, Klay, and KD made it work. Those are three guys need the ball. Like, so the system is what will make it work. Like, yeah, like Steve Kerr's system is, you know, move the ball, fluid. Thing, you know, floor spacing, all that. I don't think Ingram will be a problem with that group. The question is, do you want to like shake up the team that much? But you're not.
It's a roll
of
the dice.
Like you're basically what you're effectively doing for this year is swapping out Wiggins for Ingram because the other two guys are not, especially in the playoffs, are not going to be, I don't think, huge factors for that team. Interesting to think about. All right, I want to finish. I guess in Boston, but it's sort of about Portland as well. The Celtics road trip recently was a disaster. Like, their defense fell apart. Their offense is comically bad. They're going to get Jaylen Brown back this week. That is certainly going to help. But that is a team, Howard, that is very average. They were a 500 team last year. They're around 500 right now. It's kind of who they are with this group. They've got to make some decisions or make a decision on Dennis Schroeder. The Athletic reported that teams are expecting them to test the waters, whatever you want to phrase it, about Schroeder. That makes sense because Schroeder's on a one-year deal, and because of the Celtics cap situation, they probably can't bring him back because he's going to command a bigger salary next summer. He has been really good for them, by and large, this year. But something needs to change, I think, within this team. Now, I mentioned Portland. I don't know what Joe Cronin's going to do. He's using some interesting verbiage to like talk about like, you know, enhancing this group. And, he's sort of straddling the fence on what he wants to do. We know Lillard is not available right now. McCollum, though, is a different story. And if I'm the Celtics, I mentioned Smart and Rob Williams for Kyrie Irving, a deal that's not going to happen because of Kyrie's issues with Boston. Smart and Rob Williams for CJ McCollum, I'd do that too. Like, I'd be in on that if I was the Celtics. They need another scoring guard. Like, Smart has done the best he can as that starting point guard. But that's just not who he is. He is a Swiss Army knife type defender. He is a guy that can give you points off the bench. He can be a spot playmaker. But as your primary playmaker, I just don't think it works. And I think we've seen enough evidence of it over the first third of the season to believe it. It's not a criticism of Marcus Smart, who is a top shelf defensive guy. Like, first or second team All-NBA defense virtually every year. But they've got to change something in Boston. So would some combination of Smart and Rob Williams get it done to get CJ McCollum out of Sacramento? Maybe you got to throw something else in, but if I'm being honest, Howard, besides Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, I'd give them anything they want. Like, you want Romeo Langford? Okay. Throw Dennis Schroeder into the mix? Sure. McCollum's young enough to fit into what the Celtics want to do with Brown and Tatum long-term. I would do that in a heartbeat. I would find a way to get CJ McCollum into a Celtics uniform.
So, you know, again, we don't know what CJ McCollum's health status is or how long it's going to be before he's ready to be back on the court. Let's hope it's sooner than later for his sake, especially. And, you know, when the Blazers get to the point where they can then entertain moves and how to move forward, you and I have always agreed on this. It's time to break up the Lillard-McCollum backcourt, and the only way forward for the Blazers to try to improve this roster around Lillard, who has again insisted for the 8 billionth time that he's not going anywhere and doesn't want to ask out, then McCollum is their best piece to move. They really aren't that – you can't keep nibbling around the edges. It's not going to work. So I agree that that's Portland's way forward. Boston's way forward is really tough because, to me, you know, as essential as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are, like, Marcus Smart is, he embodies everything else that at their best we like about them, right? When they are defensively tenacious, it's about Marcus Smart. When it's about their intensity, it's about Marcus Smart. When it's about somebody being willing to step up and say something, even if maybe he went a little too far publicly, he was the one who called out the Stars for not moving the ball more. Like,
They got a bounce off that.
They did. So I'd be afraid to give up somebody who brings all that to the table. Do I want Marcus Smart as my primary point guard? No, I don't think that's his best role. But I love him as a player. And I mean, listen, on the other end,
you're talking, Howard, you're talking about the Blazers. We both agree, stale, right? Something's going to change.
And
Celtics,
it's the
same. I feel, are kind of stale too. They're the same. Like, it's maybe you're swapping out pieces and it's not going to work, but like the Celtics aren't going anywhere. Like,
right.
At some point they're not.
Yeah. It's the same
thing. And at some point too, Howard, like you start, I think Jaylen Brown's got 2 years left in his contract. You know, Tatum's got, I think, one more. You have to start thinking about that long term. Like, I just got to shake things up there. You got to do something different. And Brad Stevens has not shown any hesitancy to do that. Like, he shook up the roster this past offseason a little bit. Kemba's gone. Fournier's gone. They made a couple of deals. I'd trade the young guys if they have any value now. Ime Udoka does not like playing young players. I don't know why. Like, Romeo Langford finally got off the bench or started playing more minutes against Phoenix. You had Aaron Nesmith finally getting off the bench against Phoenix. Didn't play well. Peyton Pritchard can barely get off the bench with that team. These young players are not getting shots in Boston. So if they have any trade value, I give them all up. Like, clearly the Celtics aren't going to play them. But if you do Smart, Rob Williams, and whatever else they want besides Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I would do it. I would just do it. And I'd live with being able to fill in the space around McCollum, Brown, and Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the Celtics also have to do something more creative and bold. And if you're going to stick with Brown and Tatum, then Smart is your only other big chip.
They should stick with Brown and Tatum, though. Like, this, like, I'm not there yet. Like, McCollum and Lillard, I think we've established are not going to win anything. I'm not there yet with Brown and Tatum.
It's
like, Brown
thing.
Has missed, like, he's missed a bunch of time this year. And, like, the critics of Jaylen Brown disappeared on this recent road trip when he wasn't playing. It's like, well, we're getting Jaylen Brown back this week. We'll be all right. Like, so I'm not there with, you know, Brown and Tatum not working.
The reason they're not analogous is, I mean, one, just longevity. McCollum and Lillard have been together a lot longer and hit that brick wall many more times to give us the evidence we need, if we needed it, to say it's not working, they're not going to break through.
Right.
Brown and Tatum haven't been together as long, but also Brown and Tatum are a supersized version of Lillard and McCollum and also play, you know, can play both ways. Maybe don't all the time, but Jaylen Brown at his best is all defensive caliber defender. Tatum, I think, could get there if he puts his mind to it. And the two of them together, because of their size and their just ability to cover more positions, like, they have potential to reach a higher level, whereas McCollum and Lillard as an undersized backcourt, we're always going to be limited by that. So it is different. I do think that, you know, when you have some issues with, you know, ball control, chemistry, usage, all that stuff, because you've got two guys who both want to do a lot and they're both young and they're both, like, that's a typical thing we've seen, you know, guys jockeying, you know, for decades. That's just, you got to work through it. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. I agree with you in general. It's probably too soon to judge the Brown-Tatum pairing.
Got to change the guys around them, though. You got to see what they can do with another lead guard, you know, and there aren't many of them out there. CJ McCollum might be the only one that's out there for the next couple of years. If you can get a shot at him, I think you got to go and take it. All right, Howard, good stuff, man. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about as trade season commences and this season moves forward. We will do it again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.